We're holding on page Nun in Ksubas Ois Nun Hei. We've been talking about the greatness of Eretz Yisrael and the importance of living there and so on and so forth. So now the Gemara continues. Rabbi Lozer, he had a solid Eretz Yisrael. When Rabbi Lozer was going up from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Lozer was born in Babel, he grew up there, he learned there by Rav and Shmuel. Later on, he moved to Eretz Yisrael, and he became a star Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, to the point that we learned in Yevamos that, in general, whenever Rabbi Lozer would say something without specifying where it was from, then we would know it came from Rabbi Yochanan. Anyway, so when he had this chus to move to Eretz Yisrael, Omar, he said, Palti li mechoda, with this, it shows that Hashem has saved me from one of the curses that the Pasuk says, as the Gemara is going to quote soon, a pasuk about false Nevi'im. So now, the fact that I was able to come to Eretz Yisrael shows that I'm free of one of those. Kisam chuhu, when they gave him smicha, Omar palti li mitauti, he says, now I've been saved from two such curses. Kiyosvuhu b'soida iber, and when they appointed him to the soida iber, to the elite group of chachamim, who would be the ones to decide whether there's going to be a leap year the coming year, and things like that, involving setting up the calendar, Omar, he says, palti li mitlosa, now I've been saved from all three curses. What do we mean? What curses? Shenema, Pasuk in Yechezkel, talking about false Nevi'im of his times, Hashem says, "V'hoisa yadi elan neviim achozim shav." Remember, my hand will be, my punishment will be against these neviim who give false nevuah. And Hashem says three things. The pasuk mentions three things that they're not going to be zoicha to. Besoid ami lo yiyu. First, he says they're not going to be in the secret or the council of my people. So the Gemara interjects, "Zeh soida iber." That refers to the soida iber. So like this, in other words, these neviim, these false neviim, they might actually be great tamen chachamim. They might be of the caliber to serve on this council of iber. But because of this aveira of theirs, because they're giving false nevuah and telling. And the Navi describes over there. The problem is, for example, you have people who are doing Averis and these false Nevi'im are talking them into that what you're doing is fine. Vice versa, you have Tzaddikim that are getting discouraged because the false Nevi'im are telling them you're doing wrongly. The people in general are getting misled by the false Nevi'im to think that we can do whatever we want and we can rebel against Nebuchadnezzar and so forth and there won't be any consequences. So here, like this, they might actually be great Tamar Chachamim and maybe even people who would have been suitable for Nevuah, but because of this, they're not going to be in Soid Ami, Zeth Soid Iber, so this refers to the council of Iber. Maybe they didn't care, maybe they figured that they can finagle their way out of it, I don't know, whatever they figured, exactly, yeah. So the word Soid refers then, in fact, Maharsha points out, we learned earlier in the Sugya, we learned that one of the Sholosh Shavuos, or one of the Sheish Shavuos, whatever, one of the Shavuos that Hashem beswore the Jewish people, is not to reveal the Soid. There's a secret to the Umas Olam, and we said the Soid refers to the Soid Eber, all the intricate details of how the Beis Din would determine whether there's going to be a leap year or not. So we see that the word Soid is used for that group and for those calculations, and so yeah. Next, Ulchsov Beis Yisrael Lo Yikosehu, the Navi continues, that these false Nevi'im will not be written in the record of the Jewish people. So Rabbi Lozer understands, Zu Smicha, that refers to that these false Nevi'im are not going to get Smicha. What does that have to do with writing? Maharsha points out, because you have a Gemara in Bava Metzia that mentions that Hashem, there's the famous book, Sefer Shal Adam Rishon, that Hashem showed Adam, Dodo V'doshav, Dodo V'chachamav, every generation it's Chachamim, and it's Darshanim, so therefore, in that book, it says everybody who got Smicha, and so the names of these false Nevi'im are not going to be there. So now that Rabbi Lozer got Smicha, he's inscribed in that book, and therefore he's saying, I'm happy with that, it shows that I don't have that I haven't been affected by that curse. Another point is also, what the Gemara discusses in Sanhedrin about the procedure of giving smicha, we're talking the original smicha, ish mipiish, it didn't have to be in person. The Gemara discusses over there, you know, with Moshe and Yeshua. Moshe actually laid his hands on Yeshua's head. Does that mean in future generations you need to do that? The Gemara says no. It just means that they give him the title Rebbe, and that he has the right to judge Dine Knossos or whatever. And that doesn't even have to be that they're there in person. It can be done by letter. Famously, in fact, during a few hundred years ago, when Rabbi Yaakov Beirav tried to reestablish smicha in his times, then once he and his Beis Din had decided to do it, and there were so much a few people, including Rabbi Yaakov himself, then Rabbi Yaakov sent a letter with a smicha to the Rabbach, who was the Rav of Yerushalayim, offering him the smicha. The Rabbach turned it down and held that this whole smicha is invalid, and it blew up into a huge machloikas about the validity of it. But anyway, the point is that smicha can be given in writing, and therefore B'chsav Beis Yisrael can refer to that as well. The third one, Ve'al Admas Sira Lo Yavoyu, the pasuk continues, they won't come to the land of the Jewish people. That means Kamashmo, exactly what it sounds like. Yechezkel is saying, these false Nevi'im will be taken into Golos and never return to Eretz Yisrael. So now, Rabbi Lazar is saying that now I was Zoicha to overcome all these three, so on the contrary, none of them apply to me. Another example with one of the Chachamim who moved from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, Reb Zeira. Now, we learned a few days ago that Reb Zeira had wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael, but he was trying to stay away from his Rebbe, Reb Yehuda, because Reb Yehuda held you not allowed to move from Babel to Eretz Yisrael. But in any case, Reb Zeira eventually did. So, he had a solid Eretz Yisrael. When he was on his way to Eretz Yisrael, at one point there was a river to cross, Loy Ashkach Mabro Lemevar. He couldn't find a ferry to cross. There was no ferry available to cross the river. Maybe the ferry was out of service. Maybe it just wasn't. He didn't catch it on schedule. Whatever it is. Knock at the Metzra of a Ka'avar. He didn't wait around for the ferry. Instead, he held on to a Metzra and got across. Rashi describes a metzra as like this. You have people who are in a place where there's no bridge and people don't want to wait for the ferry, so they put a plank of wood across the width of the river, and then you cross by walking on that plank, and then alongside the plank, you have at each end, on each bank of the river, you have a peg or a pole stuck into the ground, and then you have a rope stretching from one pole to another to serve as a handrail, basically. So you're walking on this narrow board across the water, and you're holding on to this makeshift handrail, this rope stretched across the length of it. So Reb Zeira was doing that. So a certain Min saw what he was doing. He says, Amapziza, you hasty, you impetuous people, to kadmitu pumaychu l'udnaychu. You let your mouth go ahead of your ears as by Matan Turdy. He said, Nasa v'nishma. What do you mean, Nasa? We're first going to do the mitzvahs and before we even understand what they are and what they mean and everything. In fact, you have a Gemara in Shabbos where a Min says exactly the same thing to Rava, where he sees that Rava is sitting over there in a way where his fingers are bleeding, his fingers and toes are bleeding as he's learning Torah because he's sitting on them uncomfortably, and the Min says the same thing to Rava over there. So here, this Min is saying to Reb Zeira, you're always very impetuous, you're always hasty to do things without thinking through the consequences. And look at this, you're still this hasty kind of people. What do you mean? You couldn't wait a little while for the ferry? So Reb Zeira answers him, this is the place that Moshe and Aaron were not zoicha to go into Eretz Yisrael. Who says that I'm going to be zoicha to go into it? And therefore, in other words, I don't want to wait any longer than necessary. Now, to be sure, with Moshe and Aaron, it was because of something they had done wrong, but Marashah points out that that's just it. It wasn't even a matter of going into Eretz Yisrael still leading the Jewish people. They didn't even have a chance to cross the Yarden at all. We find Moshe asked, at least let me be able to cross the Yarden, and Hashem tells him, no, loy saver es Yarden azeh. So therefore, so Reb Zeira says, I didn't want to take the chance, I wanted to get across as fast as possible. Who knows, there might be Shemi Yigra Machet or something, and therefore I want to make it in as soon as possible. Continuing on how precious Eretz Yisrael was to the Chachamim, Rav Abba Menashe Kipei De'Akoi. Rav Abba would kiss the Kipei of Akoi. Akoi is a town on the coast of Eretz Yisrael. In various places in the Gemara, we consider it the border between Eretz Yisrael and Chutzlar. Strictly speaking, Eretz Yisrael, what you actually have is, touched on this a couple of days ago, technically there are different borders of Eretz Yisrael. There's the borders that are given in Parshas Maaseh, which are called Gvulis Ole Mitzrayim, and then there are the borders, then there's the area that they resettled when they came to build the second Beis Mikdash, which is called the borders of Ole Bavel. For the most part, only the area of Ole Bavel has the full Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara, in other places, explains that Akoi itself, even though Akoi was squarely within the borders of Eretz Yisrael, the first time around, it's squarely within the borders of Ole Mitzrayim, but when it came to the borders of Ole Bavel, it was actually half and half. Part of it was Eretz Yisrael, part of it was Chutzlaretz, the border ran right through it, or right next to it, and therefore, and there were areas near Akoi that were considered part of Chutzlaretz and areas that were part of Eretz Yisrael. So here we're saying, when he would get to Akoi, he would kiss the kefi over there. So Rashi gives two explanations. One is that kefi means the coral that would grow on the seabed there, on the seabed of the Mediterranean in the area of Akoi. The other explanation actually says it means the rocks or the cliffs of Akari. There's several other explanations. The Eitz Yosef brings from the Oroch that the word keifi means jewelry. So in that, and in fact, Ben Yehoyada says what it might mean is like this: people would visit Eretz Yisrael and they would take stones or its coral or whatever and make souvenirs or jewelry out of them. So when Reb Abba would come across such souvenirs, even in Chutz Lars, he would kiss them because they came from Eretz Yisrael. Reb Chanina Maskin Maskele. Reb Chanina, when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he would go and fix up any obstacles in the road that this way, in other words, you don't want, he didn't want that people should complain, look at this, the roads are hard to travel on, and that would be saying something negative against Eretz Yisrael. So he would take care to do that. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos gives a different explanation. So according to Rashi, in other words, the word maskan means you would fix up. Maskele would be meloshen takola, things that would be obstacles, things that would cause people to trip. Tosfos has a girsa maskal maskele, which means that both of them are from the shodash tokal, which Aramaic is the equivalent of shokal in Hebrew, which means that he would weigh. So he would weigh the stones as he was going along to know whether he had actually gotten to Eretz Yisrael yet. Where he would find the stones light, then he would know he's not in Eretz Yisrael yet. Where he found the stones heavier, then he would know he came to Eretz Yisrael. Tosfos doesn't explain what the significance is of the stones being heavier in Eretz Yisrael than in Chutz Lares. One possibility is because the Pasuk in Parshat Ekev tells us that Eretz Yisrael is Eretz Asher Vaneh HaBarzel. It's a land where the stones contain iron. Iron does, in fact, weigh more than stone. So if he finds that the stones are heavier, then it means they're iron-bearing stones, and then it means that we're in Eretz Yisrael. The other, Alderach HaDrush, also, the Gemara elsewhere mentions that Avoneha represents Boineha, the Tamar Chachamim, who build up the Torah and build up the Jewish people. So they, and the ones in Eretz Yisrael are weightier because they have much more koyach in Torah than the ones in Bavel, as we've learned before. So that would be another meaning. He finds the stones heavier in Eretz Yisrael, reflecting the fact that the Tamei Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael are of a greater caliber. Then the Gemara continues. Rab Ami and Rab Asi came mishimsha latula or mitula lashimsha. Rab Ami and Rab Asi, they would get up and move from the sun to the shade or from the shade to the sun. Meaning, Rashi says, if they're sitting in the sun and it's getting hot and uncomfortable, they would right away move to the shade and during cold weather, they would have to sit in the sun. The point is, again, that nobody should have even the slightest complaint about being in Eretz Yisrael. So kind of doing like the polar opposite of the Meraglim. The Meraglim saw the good things of Eretz Yisrael and complained about them and thought the worst of them. So now these Chachamim, each in their own way, are doing things just the opposite, that we should praise Eretz Yisrael as much as possible and not criticize it at all. Rav Chiya Bagamda Migander Ba'afra, and Rav Chiya Ba'aba loved Eretz Yisrael so much that he would roll in its dust. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Ki Rotsu Avadecha Asavaneha, your servants, speaking to Hashem, your servants love her stones. They Asafora Yechenenu, and they have and they find even her dirt, even her dust graceful. So Rav Chiya Bagamda would literally do that by rolling in the dust of Eretz Yisrael. Marsha says actually that these few things actually all go together. Rav Chanina was saying first we said Rav Abba would be kissing the kifei of Akai, which one meaning of kifei is rocks, as Rashi had said. So now Marsha says all these go together. Rav Ami and Rav Asi. So now, first of all, Rav Chanina would fix up any obstacles involving those stones. If any of those very stones themselves are located on the city streets and would impede people from going, then Rav Chanina would move them aside. Rav Ami and Rav Asi would use such stones to show as way markers which way they want to go. So that way, in other words, so all of these things then, so when the Pasuk is saying, Ki Rotsu Avadecha Asavaneha, is going on all of them, not just like we would learn on a simple level that it goes only on Rav Chiya Bagamda rolling in the dust. We're saying all of them also, they showed their appreciation for the stones of Eretz Yisrael by not just having them sit unused, but by using them for purposes like this to make travel and direction finding and everything easier. Now, we talked about before in the Gemara, about the brachas that are going to be in Eretz Yisrael in Yemos HaMashiach. So now the Gemara points out, on the other hand, there's going to come a time before Yemos HaMashiach when things aren't going to be so good. Omer Abzera, Omer Rabba by Yumiya, or Rabbi Yumiya by Abba, Dosh Ben David Ba, in the generation when Mashiach is going to come, Kategori by Taman Chachamim. There's going to be tremendous accusation on Taman Chachamim. Rashi says there's going to be a lot of Mastinim, a lot of people who accuse the Taman Chachamim and think the worst of them. So there's going to be a lot of that in, there's going to be a lot of that in the times of Mashiach. Some of the other Eitz Yosef points out it can also mean actually the Chachamim themselves are not going to have Avas Yisrael with one another, and they're not going to be done. They're going to be not going to be done one another with Chassus. The Gemara continues, Ki Amrita Kamei de Shmuel. So Reb Zera says, when I told over the statement to Shmuel, Omar, he says, what's going to happen before Mashiach's time? Siruf, achal siruf, there's going to be one refinement after another. There's going to be Xeris on top of Xeris, and that way it'll be refined out who's royally Moshe Mashiach and who's not. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, va'oid ba Assyria, even when there's only one tenth left, va'shava va'hoisalavar, then she will again be consumed. In other words, so like this, you have Rashi explains nine out of ten are already gone, and all that's left is one tenth, and even then, va'shava va'hoisalavar, they're still going to have to be cleaned up and burnt through with the yisurim of golos again and again, in order to get the most pure ones. So my Marshal points out that many times in Psukim, the Jewish people are compared to silver, so it needs to be refined again and again. So therefore, there needs to be this process of refining again and again. And this also goes together with this kategoria al Chachamim. When there's a lot of machlokas among the Chachamim, then the result is there's going to have to be this tziruf achat tziruf, this one refinement after another, in order to purify them of these negative midas. Tony Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Yosef teaches what's going to be before Mashiach's times, bazuzi over zuzi de bazuzi. There's going to be plunderers, and there's going to be plunderers of the plunderers. So in other words, there's going to be waves of people plundering and taking from the Jewish people, and then that's so all of this is a prerequisite for Mashiach to come to do that final cleanup. And the Gemara finishes on a more positive note. Amar Rav Chiya Ba'ashi, Amar Rav, Asidin Kolilone Srak Shav Eretz Yisrael Sheyitanu Peres. In the future, all of the non-fruit-bearing type of trees in Eretz Yisrael are going to be laden with fruit. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Ki Eitz Nasa Piriyoi, the tree will produce its fruit. The fig tree and the vine will produce their strength. Now, Rashi points out, once we already mentioned the fig tree and the vine, what does it mean? What's period? Of course, there are other kinds of trees, but in other words, well, obviously, then in that case, it would have just could have just said, in general, that the trees will produce their fruit. So therefore, we understand that period refers to the non-fruit-bearing types of trees. And in addition, the te'ena and the gefen will produce their strength and will produce good fruit and oversized fruit and everything like we learned before. Some Tosfos says that the reason why the Gemara put this over here, even though the whole discussion about the fruit of Eretz Yisrael lost in love and was earlier, was because the Gemara wanted to end the Masechta on a happy note rather than what we were just talking about, the refinement of the Jewish people in Golos. Marsha says another point as well, that all of we were just saying, Dosh ben David Ba, what's going to happen in the generation before Mashiach comes? You're going to see there's going to be the sign of the approaching Geula, that you're going to have this category of a Tamar Chachamim, like you have this final effort of the Klippos to exercise their power by having people be against the Tamar Chachamim, and then ben David Ba, then Mashiach is coming. Well, this point that the Yilonei Srak are going to be fruitful is also a simon of Ben David Ba. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, a very clear simon that Mashiach is on his way, is when we see, as Yechezkel says, that the mountains of Eretz Yisrael, which until now were so empty and desolate, are now full of trees bearing fruit. So now we're saying that part of that also is the non-fruit bearing trees will also produce fruit. So all of that is a simon for Mashiach's coming. There's, in fact, an explanation also that the Ilonei Srak over here also refers to the Amei Oretz. So, ultimately, even though we were just saying we have to go through a process of refinement and all of that, ultimately, Lo Yudach Mimenu Nidach, even the people who seem to be empty and not bearing anything, nevertheless, they still have it within them to produce fruit, and that's how it will be, and we'll see that openly when Mashiach comes. There is a sicha in Chelech of Zayin where the Rebbe analyzes actually, and it's been part, not sicha, is in addition also a hadron here on Masechta Ksubas. And there's a point, there's a, the Sifra, when it mentions a different pasuk, not the pasuk in Yoel that the Gemara is mentioning over here, but rather a pasuk in the Brachas in Parshas Bechukosai, and explains that it means that the fruit, that also that the non-fruit bearing trees will produce fruit, but that Rebbe analyzes in some detail the difference in Loshen between that Sifra versus our Gemara, where one thing is that the, there it's talking about the entire world, whereas here it's talking about specifically in Eretz Yisrael. And a number of other nuances of difference as well. And then the Rebbe ends up in that sicha, that's where you have the famous topic about the two periods in Yemos HaMashiach. Because the Rambam, we know, holds, and we've mentioned this before, that the Rambam holds that in Mashiach's times, Olim Kemen Hoge Noheg, the whole world will continue to operate according to the same natural laws that we know now, Ein Kechol Shachas HaShemesh, and therefore that the trees that don't bear fruit now won't bear fruit when Mashiach comes either. But the Rambam himself, the Rebbe goes on to explain, will have to agree that there was a second period in that, so there also we can have the Or Gemara is talking about the first period when this bracha will be limited only to Eretz Yisrael, and then the Sifra would be talking about the second period when that bracha will be extended to the entire world. In addition, actually, a number of the Mefarshim point out that really, actually, and the Rebbe touches on this in the Sicha as well, before the Chetei Tzadas, Were these trees producing fruit? Is it that all types of trees produced fruit before the Chetei Tzadas? And then, because of that chet, then many of them stopped being able to do that. Well, now, then in that case, when Mashiach comes, then that won't be a completely new thing, because the trees always had that potential, and just it was suppressed at the time of the Chetei Tzadas. Or do we say, to begin with, that some trees were created without the ability to bear fruit? In that case, then for that to start happening when Mashiach comes would be a change in Minhag HaShalom, and again, according to the Rambam, that may only be in a later stage of Yemos HaMashiach rather than an earlier stage.
Is that commentary to say Ben David and to say
Rocky
says Ben
Amram? Yeah, okay. I mean, sometimes we see in our parish also they say Ben Amram in a positive sense. Ben David means that he's getting his ability to be the Goyal from his ancestor David. It can be used in a derogatory sense, of course, but that's not what we mean over here. Hadron Alach Masechta Chesubis. Moving on to Masechta Nedarim. The Gemara explains, now Masechta Nedarim, what's it doing in Seder Noshim? So the Gemara points out, actually, that because there was a perek in Ksubas, we learned about it before, that talks about when a husband imposes a neder on his wife, so we talked about a few cases under how long does she have to put up with it before it's grounds for divorce. So the Gemara says, in connection with that, then we have our Masechta, our upcoming Masechta, which talks about Nedarim. B'chlal, at the end of the Masechta, it talks about in the Torah, when it mentions about Nedarim, it doesn't really talk about a whole lot, but most of what it does talk about at the beginning of Parshas Matos is the concept of how a father can cancel his daughter's Nedarim, or a husband can cancel his wife's, and therefore that's another reason it belongs in Seder Noshim. Shavuos actually isn't Seder Nizikin, because Shavuos, there's a difference between Nedarim and Shavuos. We've talked about before, a Neder is a person says, this object is also to me. A Shavua is saying, or another example of a Neder, as we're going to see in the Gemara, would be where the person says, for example, that I will learn this piece of Gemara or something. So those kinds of things are Nedarim. Shavuos, generally speaking, are I will or I won't do such and such. I will. So for example, I won't eat this bread would be a Shavua. This bread is also to me as if it were a korban, is a Neder. There are certain differences between them, as it talks about in the respective Masechta. So yeah, Shavuos goes in Seder Nizikin because certain kinds of Shavuos are done in Beis Din. Shavuos HaPikadin, Shavuos HaEdos, but Nedarim, like we're saying, goes here in Seder Noshim because of this point, because first of all, because it mentioned in Ksubas about Hamadiris Ishtoi, and because more generally the whole concept of being Mefer Nedarim between husband and wife is the main thing that when the Torah talks about Nedarim, it's the main focus of it. So at the beginning of the Masechta, it starts by talking about various lashonis that a person might say that constitute a neder. It doesn't have to be that a person says in so many words, for example, this object is also to me like a korban. There's certain kinds of things. He can say what's called a yad, which is a partial statement. He can say a kinui, which is not the actual word neder itself, but something related to it. You know, we have in kol nidre, when you say kol nidre, the esore, the shvoi, the chadrome, the kainome, the kinuse, a number of those. Kainome and kinuse, in particular, the Gemara explains our kinui for the word korban. Instead of using the word korban, people would use the word koinam or koinos. I think what discusses why that is. Was it that these are words for korban in some other languages? Or is it that the Chachamim invented these terms so that people shouldn't use the word korban and say korban l'Hashem and use Hashem's name unnecessarily? Anyway, the first few dafim talk about all that. Eventually, now in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva says you can have a case where a person says a loshen something like mishamasna minach. I am making myself considered to be under a cherem relative to you. So that's a form of a neder, saying in other words, therefore that I'm also to have any hanah from you. So that leads the Gemara into a little bit of discussion about the dinim of nidui and cherem. So the Gemara says, Omer Abchanin, Omer Rebbe, or Rav, Hashemeya has koras Hashem mipi chaveroi. If a person hears somebody else using Hashem's name in an inappropriate way, sorech l'nadosei. He needs to put that other person in nidui. Because you're not allowed to mention Hashem's name in vain. And by the way, the poskim say this is not just talking about Hashem's name in Lashon Kodesh. To some extent, it's maybe not as serious, but to some extent it applies in English or any other language as well. A person uses God, Samazoi, in English, it's also a problem. The poskim mention, for example, in French, for example, you know, when you're taking leave of somebody, you say adieu, which literally means with God. So the kids of Shulchan Aruch, for example, says you shouldn't be saying that. That's using Hashem's name unnecessarily. Anyway. So here Rav Chanan is saying that if you hear somebody using Hashem's name inappropriately, then you need to put him in nidui. V'im lo nidohu, and if the person who heard it did not himself put the other person in nidui, hu atzma yehe ben nidui, then he himself deserves to be in nidui. Because after all, the Ran explains that the one who hears it and doesn't say anything about it is no better off than the one who actually said it. So therefore, both of them are equally chayev.
Can people consider Musar, they don't need Asura for these things?
So we're talking about, obviously, where he did it deliberately knowing that it's wrong. Obviously, if a person doesn't know, then no, you don't put him in nidri for something that he did that's inadvertent. But we're talking about where you know that he knew. By the way, in our Masechta, I should mention, Masechta Nedarim is different than a couple of other Masechtas, is different than other Masechtas of the Gemara in a couple of major ways. The style of it is different in some places, as we'll see as we go through pieces of it. And it's not certain why. One interesting idea is that the Tiferes Yisrael brings an explanation. You know where it says in Pirkei Avos, Al Toimalach She'efne Eshne. Don't say, when I have time, then I'll learn Shemaloi Tipone, because you might not have the time. The Tiferes Yisrael points out, the Gemara in Bava Basra tells us that Rav Ashi went through the entire Shas twice. He was Rosh Hashiva for almost 60 years. They would do two Masechtas a year in the Yeshiva. So therefore, he had the chance to go through all 60 Masechtas of Shas twice. And then he composed the Gemara for us as we have it. But apparently what it was is, he didn't have the chance, says the Tiferes Yisrael, he didn't have a chance to give some of them their second revision. And therefore, they're like less polished than some of the other Masechtas. Nedarim being one of them. Nozir is another. Christus, there's a few Masechtas like that where the style of them is different, and the Tiferes Yisrael attributes it to that Rav Ashi Poshet ran out of time during his lifetime to finish them and polish them up the second time. The Sefer Dodos HaRishonim gives a different explanation. He says we find in writings from the Gaonim that in the times of the Gaonim there was a big problem. People in Bavel were very prone to making nedarim and not keeping them, or they're just making useless nedarim and shavuos and all. So the Chachamim there were concerned if we teach them these dinim, these masechtas of nedarim, and then they're going to learn from that. They're going to learn all the loopholes, and then it's going to be even worse. So in general, in the yeshivas in Babel, they tended not to learn the masechtas nedarim and nazir. For that matter, actually, it's brought in writings from the Gaonim that the whole concept when the whole concept of saying kol nidre was first invented, a number of the Gaonim in Babel were very against the idea, because that's just going to make things worse. People are going to think that we have an easy way out of our nedarim. Anyway, the point is, so Doris Rishonim says, therefore they tended to learn these masechtas more in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore the people who copied them out, remember this is long before printing, would tend to insert here and there expressions from the style of Aramaic that they spoke in Eretz Yisrael rather than the one in Babel, and therefore the masechta comes out a somewhat different style. Anyway, there's that, but another important point is Masechta Nedarim does not have the genuine Pirush of Rashi on it. There is a Pirush printed under Rashi's name in Nedarim, but it's not actually from Rashi. So they call it the Mefarish, but they consider it kind of like a second tier Pirush. The main Pirush in Nedarim is the Pirush of the Ran, which is why here in Ein Yaakov, the Ran is printed over here where Rashi usually would be. Then you have, there's an addition, there's the Rosh, and there's Tosfos, and then you have, like, on a second level is the Mefarish that's printed under Rashi's name. Anyway, so getting back to the Gemara, so again, a person hears somebody else use Hashem's name inappropriately, then he should put him in Nidui, and if not, then he himself deserves to be put in Nidui. What's so serious about using Hashem's name uselessly? Wherever use of Hashem's name is common and people are using it inappropriately, then poverty is very commonly found over there. The Ran brings, because like this, you have a pasuk at the Afni Aseres Adibros, Hashem says, "B'chol ha'mokam asher azkir shmi, in any place where I allow my name to be mentioned, over yelecha, I will come to you, uveirachticha, and I will give you a bracha." So we see that where it's appropriate to use Hashem's name, then the use of it brings bracha. Well, then the flip side is if a person is using Hashem's name where it doesn't belong, then it causes anivs. That's one point. The Ran says another point as well. There's a pasuk in Zechariah that describes the punishment for somebody who swears falsely. And the expression of the pasuk is, Hashem says that the curse from that is going to come into his house, v'chilatu, and it'll destroy the whole house, ves etza ves avonav, even the wood and the stones of the house. So therefore, the person's going to be poor because his house is going to be consumed by that kind of thing. So those are various reasons to that. So therefore we see, because of that, because it has to do with poverty, then therefore we see that's a very serious thing, and therefore you hear somebody else do it, then you have to do something about it, and if not, then there's consequences on the person himself. Marsha brings another point as well. Another source for this is in the Teuchacha, in Parshas, that he brings from the Rambam, in the Teuchacha, in Parshas Kisavai. You have the expression over there, L'yiras Hashem anichbad v'hanoda. This is actually when we read the Teuchah in Shul, we read the whole Teuchah in a low tone of voice until we get to that half of the pasuk, and then we read it out loud. L'yiras Hashem anichbad v'hanoda azeh, to fear this great and honorable name, as Hashem alekecha. So then, and the pasuk is saying, if you don't listen, then there's going to be all these consequences. So that also. Bears out what the Gemara is saying over here, that not showing respect for Hashem's name and using it frivolously brings to anius.
But the expression Hashem imachem, that's then by Amar.
So when a person is, we find at the end of Brachas that, yeah, the Chachamim in Boaz's times made a takana that you should greet each other with Hashem's name. So where you're doing it by takanas Chachamim or for another valid reason, then fine, but not Stamazoi. Even Yaakov, by the way, says that maybe what the Gemara means, not necessarily the person who heard, if he doesn't put the other person in Nidui, then he himself should be in Nidui. He says maybe what it means is the person himself who used Hashem's name frivolously, he should consider himself in Nidui, even if the Chacham don't put him in it. In any case, va'anius kemisa, and you should realize how bad it is, how bad the punishment of poverty is, it's considered equal to death. Shenemah, as we find in the Pasuk, Hashem said to Moshe, don't worry about going back to Mitzrayim to speak to Paro, because all the men who are looking to cry and kill you have died, which means Dosan and Aviram. So Dosan and Aviram were the ones who had mastered on him, and what does it mean they were dead? Now, they obviously weren't dead because we find them later on in connection with Korach. So the Ran points out like this. There are four, later on in the Masechta, it says there are four things that a person is choshuv kemes. Besides being actually dead, there is a person is poor, blind, a mitzora, or doesn't have children. Each of them, you can find a pasuk where such a person is described as similar to dead. But now let's consider. Again, with Dosan and Aviram, they're obviously not literally dead because we find them later on in connection with Adas Korach. They're obviously not blind, because in connection with that story of Korach, when Moshe sends to call for Dosan and Aviram to talk it over with them and see if he can try to get them to try and get them to give up the machlokas, they say to him, "Ha'enihan noshemahim to nakir." What do you mean? Even if you were to knock out our eyes, we wouldn't come up to you. So we see they obviously had eyes. They obviously could see. Otherwise, what would they be saying? You can't say that they were Mitzrayim, because the pasuk mentions that they lived among the rest of the Jewish people. And if they were Mitzrayim, they wouldn't be living, because they'd have to be outside the Machne. The Rosh and Tosfos also discussed another point as well. You could say maybe they were Mitzrayim at the time in Mitzrayim, but in that case, they would have been healed by Matan Torah. But then, afterwards, after the Chet Egel, everybody who was healed from the Mumin by Matan Torah, after the Chet Egel, everybody got them back. So therefore, if they were Mitzrayim beforehand, then they would have still been Mitzrayim later on as well, and again, they wouldn't have been in the Machne. As far as not having children, what do you mean? The whole point is, Hashem is telling Moshe, they've lost their influence on Paroi, and therefore you don't have to worry that they're going to go and talk to him. Them not having children would have nothing to do. That wouldn't impinge on their influence with Paroi at all, so therefore it can't be that they're considered mason because they didn't have children. So therefore, by elimination, the only thing that's left is that they became poor. V'tanya, and we learn in a braisa, Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, kol mokam shenosnu chachamim einehem boi, whenever the chachamim put their eyes on a person or on a thing in a negative way, oy misa oy oyni, either there's death or there's poverty. We have examples. We have a number of places in Shas where a chacham looked at somebody nosen einem boi v'nasa galshal atzomer, so the guy turned into a heap of bones, so that's misa. And as far as oyni, you have the story involving Rashbi and Rebbe Lazar after they came out of the cave, where everything they're looking at, they can't understand how people are going and working for a living when they should be learning Torah full time, and everything they're looking at gets burnt up. There is Oini. So we see that Misa and Oini, in other words, are considered on an equal level. So we see that it's a very serious matter, not something to be taken lightly, this whole matter of using Hashem's name in vain. So the Gemara continues. Amar Abba, have a ka'imna kamed Rav Huna. One time I was standing as a Talmud in front of Rav Huna. Shomalai, he itza de apkas koras shem shemayim mipumal avatola. He heard a woman using Hashem's name frivolously, for uselessly like that. Shamta, he put her in Nidri. Vishara lala alter ba'anpa, and then immediately in her presence, he was matur the Nidri. Because you don't have, there's no minimum time that Nidui has to be in effect. So you can put somebody in Nidui and take them out of it right away. Which the Gemara points out, Shema Mina Plas. We can learn from this little story three dinim. Shema Mina Hashemeh Haskoros Hashem Ipi Chaveret Tzorech L'Nadori. So first of all, we see what we just said, that Rav Chanan had said that you have to put such a person in Nidui, because we see that Rav Huna did that. Or Shema Mina Nidohu B'fonav Ein Matur Ela B'fonav. We see also that if you put somebody in Nidui in his presence, you can be Matur the Nidui also only in his presence. Because otherwise he's not going to know that you were matur it. And now, in this case, you could argue, okay, it so happened he was matur in her presence, but Mefoshim bring that actually it seems from the way that Reb Abba phrased it, that Rav Huna made her wait over there until he was matur the neder, until he was matur the nidri. So therefore we see that it has to be done in her presence. Or Shmamina in ben nidri la'afara v'loiklum, and we see also that there does not have to be any interval between the nidri and the afara. They can put him in nidri and then immediately take him out of the nidri. Okay. The Gemara continues on this topic of Nidorim and Shavuos. The Gemara says, Omer of Gidol Omer Rab, Minayin Shenishiborim Lakayim as a Mitzvah. How do we know that you can make a Shavuah to fulfill a Mitzvah? Now, the point of the question, there's a couple of different explanations among the Mefoshim what exactly the point of the question is. One is that it's not considered a Shavuah of Atala, given that we're all Mushbah V'Oim in Mahar Sinai, as the Gemara is going to point out. Another point is that if a person does make such a Shavuah, then if now he does end up violating it, he is going to be Chayav a Korban for violating his Shavuah. Now, if it was a useless Shavuah, if it was a Shavuah that doesn't take effect, then he wouldn't be Chayav for a Korban for it. But we're saying that the Shavuah actually has the ability to take effect, and therefore he would actually be Chayav a Korban if he's over on it. But in addition, it means that it means that it's able to take effect. It also means, how do we know that it's a good thing to do? Given that you're not supposed to just take a Shavuah for nothing, how do we know it's a good thing to do? Shenema, because the Pasuk says, David says on himself, Nishibati v'akayema v'gomer, I've sworn and I will fulfill to do the mitzvahs. So we see that David is saying that it's appropriate for a person to strengthen his resolve to do a mitzvah by swearing to do it.
Certain things need to be.
So the question is, yeah, but isn't he already besworn from Har Sinai? So how can such a Shavuah take effect? Now what you have is, usually, One difference between Nedarim and Shavuos is, in fact, as far as that matter, so actually technically with Shavuos, it is possible to make one Shavuah on top of another. A person were to say, I swear not to eat this bread, and then again, I swear not to eat this bread, each time would be considered a separate Shavuah, and if he's over on it, he's going to be bringing multiple Korbanos or all that.
He has to
be matzah neder twice as well. Yeah. On the other hand, a neder is different. If a person were to say, this bread is also to me, and then again say, this bread is also to me, nothing happens the second time because it's already also from the first one. In any case, though, the question is, fine, so Tosfos and the Ran explain, the question is not so much how is it possible for such a neder to be chal, but what would be the good of making such a neder if he's already mushba v'oimim ha'asinei? And the answer is, Elo ha'kamashmalam, d'shari leila inish l'zeruzi nafshei. Just that a person can make such a shavua in order to strengthen his resolve to do the mitzvah. And we're saying that it's an appropriate thing to do because it helps him, it strengthens his resolve to do that. Thus, we find also, we find, Marshall points out, you know, we have before a person is born, Mashvi Yenoise, Tit Tzadik, Val Tirosha. So what's the point of that Shavuah also if we're Mushba V'Omin Mahar Sinai? So it's the same kind of thing. In other words, that it's in order to be Mizarez, it's in order to encourage the soon-to-be-born child to actually fulfill what he's supposed to. Of course, we have in Chassidus also, there's the idea, Mashbien is also Masbien, that it means that he's being given resources, Min HaShemayim, to fulfill. So this also fits with this also, that when a person is Mashbia himself, he's also Masbia himself, he's also fortifying himself with resolves of the, with resolves of Kedusha to be able to actually fulfill what he's supposed to. So it doesn't even have to be. I mean, technically a Shavuah would have to be with Hashem's name or with a Kinui, but it doesn't even have to. It's possible for a Shavuah or a Neder to be without a name of Hashem and a Stochal. So the Gemara brings also the Omer of Gidol Amarav, Ha'omer Ashkim Eshna Perek Zer, Masechta Zu. If a person says, I will get up early and I will learn this Perek or this Masechta, Neder Godol Nodar Leilekei Yisrael. That constitutes a great Neder to Hashem. In other words, he shouldn't just think, well, he didn't say it wasn't a Shavua with a name of Hashem. Maybe it means that he means Shaloi L'Shem Shemayim and Hashem Shesbi Chal. Nevertheless, we're saying it is a great neder to Hashem, and therefore he has to actually do it. Also, if one person says to another, let us get up early and let's learn this section of Torah together, Olav Lahashkim, the one who came up with the idea, is the one who has to get up first and be there first. Shenemar, as we find in the pasuk, Vayomer Eli, Hashem says to me, Yechezkel, Kum Tzeyalabik, Ben Adam, Kum Tzeyalabika, get up, go to the valley, and I'm going to give you a nevuah over there. Vayetzeyalabika, and Yechezkel continues, I went to the valley, Vehine Shem Kvod Hashem Oimed, and behold, the glory of Hashem is standing there. So, like so to speak, Hashem initiated the idea, come here, we're going to learn something together, and Hashem is there first. Hashem is waiting for him. We learn also from that that the Eibishter is the Rebbe and Yechezkel is the Talmud. It's not, you usually wouldn't think the Rebbe should be waiting for the Talmud, but Hashem doesn't worry about that. But we see also that like Hashem is saying, come, let's have a chavrusa together, and therefore Hashem is the one who appears there first. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Dalad Shvat. In these times, that we're talking about based on the simonim that Chazal gave in Sanhedrin and in Midrashim, and we just had something at the end of Ksubas as well, we can see we really are already at the stage of Geula. And the Rebbe talked about in many sikhas that we have tremendous amounts of Maaseinu Vavadaseinu throughout all the generations, especially after what all the Rebbeim accomplished, up to and including the Avodah of the Friedrich Rebbe and of our Rebbe, we've already finished all the Birurim and we really are ready for Mashiach. Yad Mamash. Continuing on halachas of Shabbos, we were starting to talk about dinim as far as medical treatment on Shabbos, where a person just has an ache or something like that, but not something that serious. So if a person has a toothache, so again, if he's having great pain from it, then that's one thing. But if it's only a little pain, he can't. Now what a person might want to do for that is to gargle some vinegar or something like that around and swish it around his mouth, and that would help ease the toothache. So he can't swish it around his mouth and then spit it out. What he could do is, though, he could drink the vinegar and swallow it. Because that would be fine, because then vinegar is something we learned in the previous sif, that things that people sometimes eat, just normal healthy people eat as well, is fine. And vinegar, sometimes people drink vinegar as well, pickle juice or whatever, because they like the taste of it. So the same way over here, but for him to spit it out would show that he's obviously doing it for refuah, so that's a problem. Another possibility is he could dip bread in it and eat it like normal, and then again it'll help that affected tooth. The same way, if a person has a sore throat, so again, he can't gargle with some kind of drink, but he can drink it and swallow it. If it helps, then good, but not to gargle with it and spit it out, because again, that's showing that he's doing it for refuah.
Mouthwash
is a different matter. I mean, mouthwash, you're not really doing for refuah per se. That's to make your breath better, so that's not really a matter of refuah. I'm fairly certain you are allowed to use mouthwash on Shabbos, but don't quote me on that, because I would have to look that up. But yeah, if a person is gargling the mouthwash, let's say, because he has a sore throat, then we're saying they figure the mint or whatever will help his sore throat, then we're saying that would be a problem. Yeah. Yeah, but again, that's not a matter of refuah. We have to distinguish between refuah versus making his breath smell better, yeah.
We take